Welcome to another episode of That Wired. I am Elias Lambrianos, and I'm here today with Dr. Tobias Moser, who's joining us from Munich. Tobias, would you like to tell us a bit about what you do, a bit about yourself as well?
Sure. Thank you, Elias. Great to be here. Thank you. So my name is Tobias. I'm a lawyer by profession, specializing in financial restructuring, mid-cap to large-cap. And we are advising companies and creditors in financial restructuring situations in Germany and surrounding jurisdictions.
And today in Germany, what are the, I suppose you mainly specialize in mid-cap companies?
Yeah, that's correct. Mostly mid-cap.
And what are the trends you're seeing today in the German restructuring market, if we can focus on this?
Sure. So we basically see two trends, I think, that are worth speaking of currently in the market. First is, so I'm personally doing a lot of bond restructuring. So what we see in the bonds landscape is that many German mid-cap, mid-sized companies, when looking for issuances of bonds, not so many of them rely on German government bonds, but increasingly go to other jurisdictions, even if their business is in Germany. And what we see a lot recently is basically Nordic bonds. So bonds issued under regulated by Nordic jurisdictions.
And within, so why are so many German issuers? I mean, we've certainly been seeing many German issuers issuing Nordic bonds or Nordic government bonds. We also, I think there have been three companies recently that have also attempted to issue Nordic bonds. And also we have, I think we saw the opening a Norwegian kind of brokerage firm. They opened a branch in Germany. So why are they issuing Nordic bonds?
Well, in my personal opinion, there's two main reasons for that. The first is that the Nordic market is an established market with a actually worldwide investor base. So you're not limited to German investors, but you can also approach investors in Scandinavia, where there's a long tradition also of capital market instruments as an investment, but also American funds and other investors. So you have a larger universe of investors. That's one point. And specifically for the German market, I believe many German companies do it because there has been a lot of bond issuance in the German mid-cap segment over the last decade or two decades, basically since 2009 when the German Bond Act came into place. And many of them went distressed and there were a lot of insolvencies. So the trust in German bond issuances has suffered. And the Norwegian market, as for today, is not doesn't have that obstacle that much.
And is that the reason the Nordic market's better able at attracting these US investors, let's say the German market? Or
yeah, first of all, this is one of the reasons. And the second is that there is a more or less standardized set of covenants and documentation that is quite known to them. Whereas in Germany, obviously, you also have documentation, but a lot is also governed by German law, so things work a bit different. But I think one main issue is, of course, a lot of insolvencies and companies that shouldn't have issued bonds in the German jurisdiction and governed by German law, and that had a bad impact on market reputation.
So you expect that we will see more German companies issuing Nordic bonds?
I expect more will try. Okay. For the integrity of the market and Nordic market, the question is, will everyone who wants to do a Nordic bond be able to do one? Because if you have a company that is not run well or has bad economics, it doesn't change a thing where you issue the bonds under what law. So you might end up in restructuring as well.
So we expect that the better quality names perhaps will be able or might be able to issue the less, less well-run countries, let's say, might struggle a bit more.
Yes, if the banks who place it and the investors sign off also in the investments on not so well companies, then that might be a problem for the Nordic bond market as well, because recently there's a difficult environment for every company. So looking at the terms and looking at the finance of the company is also relevant when you have an oligopoly.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. As I mentioned, though, I think recently we've seen around three companies try to place Nordic bonds through German issuers and let's say fail to, yes, to place them. Okay, and moving on, what else are you seeing in the German market?
So the second large trend, and that is actually not really linked to the bond topic, is what we see increasingly in financial restructurings is that there's a new instrument that's called restructuring as a service, or also known as shareholding as a service, that is an additional tool for its insolvency restructuring. And it mainly exists because the M&A market for distressed assets and companies is very difficult currently in Germany. So selling companies that are in distress, you usually don't get anything for that if you can find a buyer at all.
Yeah.
So restructurings usually live off the fact that you have assets you might be able to sell, or new money you can raise. And in situations, especially creditor-led situations, where creditors do not want to take equity on their own books due to accounting or regulatory reasons, such a service provider comes in and takes the equity in order to facilitate restructuring. So that's a trend we see since 2 or 3 years in the German market with increasing numbers, and that's from, I'd say, mid-cap also to large-cap companies.
And this is just because this is not something everyone's familiar with. I mean, there's some other jurisdictions that have done it. I think that it may have been some examples in the UK, but generally, I mean, certainly in Germany, it's a recently new trend or new emergence. What's the difference between what you've described, this shareholders as a service or restructuring as a service, and your classic trustee or trusteeship?
Untechnically spoken, you could consider it sort of a trusteeship, but the main difference is that a trustee actually holds something on behalf of someone else, with the effect that the one who, the beneficiary, actually has usually structural rights to the trustee, and it's usually economically seen his equity or his assets. So from an accounting perspective, from a tax perspective, and not from a formal legal perspective, but from the economic perspectives, he is acting on someone's behalf.
Okay.
The provider of a restructuring as a service provider actually is a new owner, more like a turnaround investor. So he takes it on his own books. He's also in charge of driving the restructuring on his own. There is no instructions from anyone. So he's a real owner that is necessary. And at the same time, obviously, the other stakeholders do not need to take the risk of equity or the downsides equity might provide.
And this is and the firm that's providing the service, so do they get their fees as a percentage of recoveries, or how exactly does it work?
Yes. So in general, we differentiate between two main areas of this research and the services. The one area is a classic carve-out situation where a company or group company has assets, and let's say a subsidiary is really cash burning and it's not running well, it's an acquisition that failed, and they try to sell it in the market and they're not survive basically. So what's left is selling it to a turnaround investor, you know, all the names, so a fund book form, a dowry, takes the assets and then does with it whatever it wants. But there are many situations where a company doesn't want it because they still need the production. They have a lot of intercompany links between their assets and the carve-outs. So they want some sort of someone they can trust, you know, a trusteeship. But the difference is it is the companies. So it's a carve-out situation where this situation, where this provider, where these kind of providers actually acts as a turnaround fund, but as a servicer, more like a servicer. So they ask, what does the seller want? Do they want to produce more? Shall we not sell it maybe in the end, or what should we do with it? So there's more interconnection with it, with the seller. And that's one point. And in the financial restructuring situations, we're talking mainly about there is the fee usually is structured. I mean, you can structure it as you want, but it is advisable to structure the fee in a way that the shareholder's interests, the provider's interests, and the creditor's interests are aligned. So you can either do it with a percentage of the EV. If it's a sales situation, you can also look at the recovery rate of the lenders or whatever makes sense. It is not very advisable to do it on an hourly rate or a retainer-based rate, because if the restructuring is the main thing you want from the provider, holding equity and developing the assets, you need to incentivize them to actually do that and not simply hold it, do nothing.
And do at any point the firm, I mean, I don't know if I could call them an agent, or the firm that's providing this, doing the restructuring as service, or I think you call it RAS.
Yeah.
Do they assume any risk themselves?
Well, they are assuming the equity risk in full. So they are basically buying an asset that has an economic equity value of usually zero because it's over indebted. And they are building up their structure to take it on their own books, becoming their own UBO, and taking the risks that any shareholder must take, including consolidation and any kind of liabilities. What they usually do not do, they do not put any own money in there besides funding the structure, because they are a provider, and no one would do in the markets, otherwise as it would have been sold. So it is a service provided for.
As the RAS provider is basically... is incentivized to recover or sell, or obviously because their remuneration is more or less tied to the success of this exercise.
Exactly. I mean, you can also, it depends on the situation, that the success might also be to hold it for 3 years and then sell it or resell it to the seller or something like that. Then you could structure it in a way that you say, okay, for 3 years you get a fee of X, but usually there's work to be done. Usually there is, for example, a structuring opinion that needs to be executed. There is a management that needs to be incentivized to set up MIPS. You need to help with the M&A process and these kind of things. So it's a lot about governance. And big advantage for a creditor is they can stay in the creditor position. They do not need to go into boards. They do not need to take it on their own books.
Yeah.
They do not need to consolidate in their accountings, but they can stay a creditor and get their recovery out of their...
So will they remain the creditor of record? The original creditor that the RAS provider that's pulled up is helping or is working with? They will remain the creditor of record throughout the process.
No, the creditors remain to credit.
Yes.
So the RAS provider only takes the equity, since that does the work. Usually you have it in situations where, honestly speaking, mostly banks or regulated entities who have regulation or accounting issues and cannot or do not want to take entities on their own book, on their own books. And as the name implies, restructuring as a service is also a service. So you're basically also... outsourcing restructuring resources to someone who does it for a living, and your own departments can focus on other situations where there is no equity involved, for example.
Yeah.
So it is, and it buys you time in a market where an immediate sell it now and repay does not work.
Yes. Okay. And it almost reminds me a bit, although obviously that there are mechanical differences. It reminds me of maybe 10, 15 years ago, we started hearing about the rise of litigation funders. So they were, taking the asset, but obviously this is different what you're doing. And we're seeing a number of companies in the German markets providing this service. Some call it shareholding as a service, I think SaaS, and some call it restructuring as a service, like your firm does.
Yeah.
And do you expect... more entrants in this space?
There are already, I would say, 5 to 10 relevant players in the market in Germany, which is quite a lot, because up to 2 years ago there were maybe one or two doing this.
many are looking at it, but it, you need a certain skill set
yeah.
to actually do it. And you need, in my opinion, a good reputation and a good network within the restructuring, also, and honestly, the M&A market. Because these situations are not public usually. And it is a very, it's a situation that needs a lot of trust in the service provider. Because as I told you in the beginning, you don't have formal instruments of instructions or agreements between the provider and the bank where they could say you have to do this, this, and this. It is more structured by incentivation, but there is a clear wall between the creditors and the equity. And if you have someone that you cannot trust, you have a problem because it's not enforceable. Usually those situations are based on long time or long year relationships on track record in these kind of situations. So the market entry hurdle is quite high.
Yeah.
Players we see who are offering this service are all known and reputable players in restructuring markets.
And Tobias, before I let you go, I just wanted to get your kind of outlook on the German business, the Frikid in Germany, the German restructure market. What do you see happen, everyone?
Well, in the big picture, I would say restructuring has become, and in Germany, I was always saying national sports.
Yeah.
Before it was like badminton, now it's like football, so everyone does it. There's a lot of restructurings, and it's difficult really to find good advisors who still have capacities, to be honest. I do not see the restructuring coming to an end in the near future, simply because I do not think the crisis is behind us.
Yeah,
I think we're in the middle of it, especially for Germany. One main driver, in my opinion, was the interest rates that skyrocketed in end of 21, beginning of 22. I believe end of this year, beginning next year, we're going to look at a lot of refinancing needs.
Yeah,
from term loans as well as from bonds that are still outstanding. And what we see very often, people are not able to refinance it easily by reissuing a new bond or just simply prolonging the existing lines. And so I think we are still, I don't know if it's going to increase, but we're going to look at a stable workflow for the next couple of years.
This is so a steady supply of distressed and
I'm afraid, and situations don't get easier, especially when they come into insolvency, because until 3 years ago, insolvency administrator could sell off any asset to someone, and now they can't.
Yeah,
so they more and more need to liquidate, and that's a main, often a zero for the creditors and for the equity for sure. So the need also for out of insolvency restructurings is going to increase, my personal view.
Well, I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. Tobias Moser, and thank you, the audience. You can watch DebtWired on Spotify or any platform you use to get your podcasts on.